serving veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, and this episode marking 75 years since the sinking of the escort carrier USS Bismarck Sea, still the last American carrier ever lost to enemy action. It was hit by two kamikazes on February 21, 1945, with multiple explosions to follow as munitions throughout the ship were detonated. Albert Henderson was a 19-year-old cook who you heard described trying to abandon ship multiple times only to be washed back aboard by giant swells. When he finally did make it into the waters off of Iwo Jima, he had zero clothing, and there was another problem. He really didn't know how to swim.
But this other guy bailed off about that time. And I'm going, and I get out to him, and I grabbed a hold of him, and he liked to come unglued. And the minute I seen him, still, it was just dusk and getting dark, but mm-hmm. you could still see pretty good, and especially from the fire. And he just come unglued. "You're going to sink us and drown us." I said, ho, partner. "It don't take but about a cup of air. You can float if you don't panic." I said, "Let's say a prayer. That might help." And he was not with all of his cookies at the moment. He was so upset.
Sure, understandably so in that situation.
And, of course, they can guy come up to him and grab him on the shoulder. That would have upset anybody. I probably would have really learned to swim in a hurry had that happened to me. So anyway, and the waves were up here and he's down here, and we passed the night and he's up here, and then it starts getting darker. And then all of a sudden I'm going, and here's this plank of wood coming out. I said, "My God, it's a 2x4. How? Oh, that's that teak wood that they store underneath the flight deck. So when they puncture the flight deck, the planes, they go up and repair it with wood because it's a wood deck. If they stored it right underneath, I know exactly where it come from. It's all tied down in there, and it just stays there, and nobody touches it. But it broke loose. I got my plank back."
You were a plank owner after
all.
Yeah,
and that was mine.
So all of a sudden you have something to hold on to that's going to keep you afloat.
Yeah, but the problem is like that, I was doing it, but you can't hold it tight because then you'll just go like a cartwheel because the waves, see, is so big
mm-hmm.
and you're such a small person. So I found out if I just hold it loosely, it likes to beat you to death because it's turning. But anyway, I lost it because if you'd be up and down and backwards and all of a sudden, where's my plank? It just disappeared.
Sure.
I don't know how long I had it. It was weird because he was right there, and then he drifted away. And I asked him to say a prayer, and we did together and everything. So,
what do you pray in a moment like that?
God, help me through it. And you go by hours. It seemed like a week. And you're so tired. And you might think, well, God, you know I need help. And then you think, oh, I guess you're busy. Mm. I see all these little flashlights. They give us flashlights to put on our life belts. Just a little cell. You can see them bobbing all over. But you can't get to them because by the time you one step forward, three backwards.
With the waves.
Yeah. So anyway, that was that. And pretty soon I took and seen a light come across. It's above me. So then the wave takes me up. There's no light. And I'm starting down, and all of a sudden this light goes above me again. I think, that's a motor whaleboat out there. I couldn't hear it because of the water and everything. All of a sudden I spot this white thing there. That's a sign that was up by the skipper's quarters where they had a sun deck built, and the sign reserved for officers only. And I've been up a dozen times because I used to take steaks up for him, mm-hmm. not for him, but for his Filipino cook. So I knew where it come from. And I said, I've got to get that sign. And then when I see the light coming, hold it up. Then the light will hit that because invariably this has been going on for several minutes. And that light's coming. Here it's coming. I hear the motorboat, blip, 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 blip. And then I'm down and the light goes above again.
Mm-hmm. And so, who knows how much longer you can survive out there?
Well, I'd already given up a couple times.
What do you mean?
What's the use? But I said, no way, coach. I'm not wasting all this time. That's when I decided. And sure enough, I could hear that, but. And here comes a light, and boy, my arm goes up, and I'm help holding it up there and like this.
Holding that sign to reflect it.
Yes. And the light comes, zoom, stop, vroom, right there. And I, but, I could hear it, concentration. I'm up and down, but I can hear that motorboat. Mm-hmm. So that's when they come to pick me up. And I told him to just let me hang on. My arms, I didn't have no strength. I couldn't get in.
You were so weak from dog paddling, from holding on to that 2x4, from just keeping your head above water.
I didn't have no strength at all.
How long had you been in the water?
A little over 4.5 hours, 4.5, 5 hours.
Wow.
I'm assuming what time I left. I don't know when I left. I didn't have a watch. But somebody's, what the hell are we going to do? Grab. I said, grab anything, that little handle, I don't care. I had no clothes. They couldn't, and I was slicker than an onion from the, and so finally he got my leg and threw me over, and this guy just uncurling scream. He had a leg about half gone, and they threw me right on. He was laying in the bottom of the boat. Well, I couldn't see. I didn't know they had these little lights. So I was so tickled to be aboard. It was cold, man, it was cold. So this kid that was driving the boat gave me his pea jacket, pea coat. And boy, that felt so good. It was worth $1,000 if I had $1,000. I would have given anything. But that's when they picked me up, and then we headed back for the Patterson. That was the ship the motor whaleboat was from.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, when I got to the ship, I stepped on the gangway. They had it down to the water line and stepped up, and I handed him his jacket back. Thanks, Mac. Welcome. So he took off, and then his shaved tail on duty. He says, my God, sailor, where's your clothes? And I says, well, I lost them in the floating crap game. What do you think? And then I thought, he don't know what a floating crap game is. He didn't come from my neighborhood. He don't know. Because he's just looking at me. Floating crap game? I thought, oh, he don't know the rules.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that's almost got me in trouble again. But the next day I confronted him, and he was really laughing.
He so said, you finally got some clothes. You probably got some food.
I got aboard, and the guys, see, I was so long getting aboard. There's only one guy picked up after me. So I got inside, and I asked them if they picked up Chubby that they knew of. Chubby, yeah, the Italian cook. Yeah, he's down below an officer's mess. He's got a hell of a hole in him.
This is your best friend?
Yeah. I said, well, what's he doing? Well, he's doing best you can. Get that plugged up, it'll be a lot better. But they was operating on the mess table. So what they was doing, stopping blood best they could. So I couldn't go down there right then. But so they finally found a pair of pants. So the guys broke out all their clothes, everything, towels, everything, to give to us. Put these pants on. I couldn't put them together. They was like a V-line up. Real small. Smallest pants I ever seen in my life. So this guy handed me a shoelace, so I tied a shoelace on the top just to kind of hold them a little bit. And it was like I was fixing a bouquet. I mean, right in the middle. And the guys are giving me hee-haw for what for. And
sure.
I don't monkey with me. I'm sick, man. Everybody's throwing up, swallowing all that salt water by the hour.
Mm.
And we're bloated and thirsty and hungry and cold and mad.
Yeah.
So you don't fool with people when they're like that. You learn right quick when it's time to shut up. But it was really funny in a way. This kid says, hey, man, you're shaking really bad. I said, I'm cold. What the hell you think? I got no clothes. And I said, anything. You got a big towel? Anything. So he says, well, I got a Red Cross sweater that they knitted for me in our hometown. They sent to the guys on the ship. You know, they all get together and they'll sponsor a ship or whatever. So I said, oh, gosh, that'd be great. So he brought me this here knitted sweater, compliments of the American Red Cross or something, certain down in Iowa or whatever.
Right.
So I put that on, and then I said, if you got an extra towel, I'd sure like that. Because I said, from my neck up, I can't even feel my head. It's cold. And I couldn't eat. I was so sick. I mean, it just bloated from that salt water. And I was full, but I was hungry. But it didn't matter. So he gave me that. So I put that on. Then they come get me and said that they wondered if I would do some identification. They said I knew most everybody. Somebody, I don't know who it was. And I said, well, if I can help, I'd be glad to. They said, well, and by the head back, we have a place set up. We've got some of these people that we don't know who are, and they don't have any dog tags or nothing. So it would help if you could partially identify them and put us on the right track. So I said, sure. So I went out there, and it was so cold. I thought it was cold inside, but the doors and decks were shut. But once you go out in that air, oh, it just, whew. But I went up, and it was one of my cooks. So I told him, I said, that's when we use him as a butcher. We call him the old man. I think he was 30 years old. But he was our butcher.
So here you have just narrowly escaped death, and you have to go identify those who didn't escape.
Yeah, because, see, the next day they wanted to have burial at sea because these smaller stories had no place to keep these bodies.
Right.
So on our ship, if we had a little like that, we had room in our freezers because we had big freezers. And if we was out for a while, one of them was getting a little empty, but we didn't keep it going. But we could always start it up again. But these little ships don't have that luxury. Yeah. So that was the whole idea. So I did, and positive, and somebody else came along and they concurred. And so the canvas sack, he goes, next day we're going to have burial at sea. But that's tough to see your friends. But they're over with. I mean, they have no worries. And that's the only way you can look at it.
Do you look at that also and say, that could be me?
Not really.
No.
Because as far as I was concerned, that wasn't going to happen.
I guess not. If you survived what you survived, you must have had some willpower. When did you realize that you were also wounded?
You know, I didn't put it hard. I kept feelings on my back. I had a guy look at it, and he says, well, you got all, it looks like scratches or something. But he says, it's really weird looking. So I said, oh, okay, fine. He says, but there's no blood or nothing coming out. And I said, well, fine.
Mm-hmm.
That's good. So I couldn't figure that out. So following day, we had the thing, and then we went back to Iwo, and that's when I could see him raising the flag on the second raising the flag, the big one. So I asked one of our reunions, I ran across one of our doctors. He didn't see us for about 10 days because he was an officer and he was picked up and given different treatment, of course. And most of them were pilots, so they tried to get them airplanes and got them out of there. So he says, I was wondering about that. He says, but I come to the conclusion that you was in the water immediately. So that cold water sucked all the poisons and all the bacteria off those shrapnel wounds. And he said, you got a lot of them. But he says, I put you down for the Purple Heart. I said, oh, I don't need that. He said, well, you're going to get it. But he says, you no infection or nothing. So he says, there's no treatment right now for that because he said, everything's closed up. If you have problems, then they will open. But tell them to be awful careful because there might be metal in you. But when I hit the bulkhead, it was stuff that was sprayed onto the walls. It was coming loose. And it was like a metal spray preservative, I don't know what to call it. And that's what I had embedded in my back.
Mm.
So he said, I think he was in there so long, it just pulled all the poisons out and stopped the bleeding. And he says, I couldn't have done a better job. He says, I got right now a whole bunch of white marks back there.
Mm-hmm.
And different people said something about it. I said, oh, yeah, I think I got shot in the war or something. You know,
it was when you were thrown against the bulkhead that you're wounded. And had you not ended up in the water, you might have had a longer recovery from that.
Yes. And I've had a couple things in my back, and I told the dermatologist, if you have it analyzed, if it's metal, would you please save it?
Uh-huh.
Because I'd like to find out if that's really what's going on.
Well, let me ask you this, too. Your best friend is this other cook, and when you get aboard, they tell you, well, he's got a big hole through him.
Yeah.
When did you get a chance to talk to him, and what did you say?
That very few minutes, I went down there and says, asked him what he was doing. And he says, in your business. I said, you're bleeding on an officer's rack and you're going to get court-martialed for it. I said, do you realize the mess you're making? And he told me what uncertain terms to get out of there and where to go. And I said, I'm halfway there already. I just want to see if he's okay. I said, you're able to raise the devil. I didn't say that, but
yeah.
More or less, and he told me again where to go, and I said, I'm on my way. He says, it's not fast enough for me. But we was real good friends, and he could never really take me, so he knew that. So.
Well, and it's a really good thing he survived the war, because it really impacted your life. I'm going to get to that in a minute. But, you know, I had the chance to interview another sailor from your ship years ago, another redhead from your ship who's since passed away. And one of the real striking memories he had was being recovering on a hospital ship, and seeing that flag on top of Mount Suribachi. And you made reference. You saw the second flag, the more famous flag, the one that's...
I seen the first one, too.
You saw them both?
Yes.
All right, tell me the story.
Well, it's just that we didn't have binoculars or nothing. We're cooks. We have no business with them, but we go topside. If the gunners are there and you harass them enough, they'll let you use them for a second.
Look through the gun sight, which magnifies.
Yes. Yeah. I watched, but we'd see... different troops drive up, something all of a sudden big poof, and then be gone. And we had to get out of there because we're shrapnel country and we don't have helmets or nothing. So when we come there back, when they raised that bigger flag, we was out there and come back. And same thing, they let me use their binoculars. I could actually see it. But I didn't know the story.
Nobody did, sure.
See, and I couldn't figure out what was going on, but it was amazing that I could see that. I thought, gosh, this is weird, but it was like a time lapse now, I think about it. A time lapse or something. Why? Because it didn't make sense, because we was out busy, and then all of a sudden we're back like slow motion and they're raising the flag. They already did that.
Mm.
But we couldn't see hardly the first one at all.
Yeah.
Because it was, well, smaller and then a lot of stuff going on, you know.
So when you saw the second, it was a little easier to spot.
Oh, yeah. That was, like I say, and then I had actual binoculars. Before, we were looking through a gun sight and you're here, there, and you can't, your eyeballs can't, unless you're used to that. But I thought that was great.
I know we've bounced kind of all over the place, but just thinking of Mount Suribachi, I'm reminded that you had the experience Honor Flight. And one of the first things you see is that statue, the Marine Corps Memorial, and those guys raising the flag. Was that significant for you?
Yeah, felt good.
What did it make you think of?
I was able to eat all that time. Food has always been my thing. Either mess it up, try to cook it, or learn why. But I was proud. Not always proud of my life, because I sometimes thought maybe I could have done better, but maybe, maybe not. I'll never know now, because I've about done it all. But I've had an interesting life, and I've appreciated everybody looking after me and appreciating me as a person.
Well, the main attraction on your journey to Washington, the World War II Memorial, and they have that wall of gold stars. That's 406,000 Americans who died in the war, and 318 of them died the night you almost died.
Yeah.
Did you think of those guys when you were there?
That was awful hard. I was trying to tell one of the reporters there, and I said, I don't think I can. See, I never talked about this at all. My grandkids, my wife, my daughter. My wife said once in a while would make me kind of shiver. And I didn't dwell on it because it wasn't an affliction as far as I was concerned. But when I see all that there and I think, oh, but there I go for the grace of God. And I feel good about it.
And even though he's battled some significant health challenges in the last year, he is still feeling good about it as he approaches his 95th birthday. That is Albert Henderson, one of the last remaining survivors from the sinking of the USS Bismarck Sea 75 years ago on February 21st, 1945. That's all the time we have on Hometown Heroes today, but thanks so much for listening. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.